Hare Krishna. How many of you are in third year or fourth year? Please raise your hands. Third or fourth year. Okay. Thank you. So today's session on art of self-management. It has two parts. The first part is slightly devotional from based on Bhagavad Gita. Of course, the second part, which is talking more about management, will be more appreciated by those who have been working as a team leader in a group, of people, or those who are given a responsible position where you are accountable for some project. You'll be able to appreciate it more. That's why I was asking about the third year and fourth year students. Even the other ones, even others will appreciate it. The subject is certainly a very deep subject, but I have only presented the very preliminary principles, what we generally present in the companies. So today's seminar will give you an idea how amazing it is that Bhagavad Gita has such a direct relation with the job of a modern man. One of our purposes of presenting this seminar is to help the modern youth know that spirituality and working in a company job, these two are not mutually exclusive. In fact, spirituality in workplace is very much a possibility. In fact, it's very much a necessity. One of the most recent books published by Stephen Covey, the famous author of Seven Habits of Highly Effective People, he published a book called as Eighth Habit, which he calls us From Goodness to Greatness. So there he presents how four types of Q, quotients, PQ, EQ, IQ and SQ. So he presents about them very deeply. He talks about how we have a physical quotient, an emotional quotient, an intelligence quotient, and a spiritual quotient. And all four are necessary, and although all are necessities, the SQ or the spiritual quotient is the nourisher of the other three, he explains in his book. So, you'll be amazed to see how there is so much of management talk even within Srimad Bhagavad Gita. Lord Krishna speaking to Arjuna. First part of the presentation, we'll be talking something about the self-control. I would like to give a brief explanation about what is the meaning of this self-management. There are many subjects like self-management, self-development, self-awareness, self-actualization. All these topics contain the word self. What they exactly mean, they all have slightly different meanings. For example, when you say self-development, that talks about life and work balance, which means how to balance your good physique and how to balance your social need, your intellectual need and spiritual need. Balancing all these things is called as self-development. And self-actualization is nothing but self-realization. What Maslow talks in his triangle as self-actualization is self-realization. What you learn in Discover Yourself course, that is self-actualization. So, self-development, self-actualization, then we have self-awareness. Self-awareness is to learn to take a look at oneself. What kind of person am I? What are my strengths, weaknesses, opportunities and threats? We call it a SWOT analysis. So we do a SWOT analysis for a company. We also can do SWOT analysis for an individual also. So to take a look at yourself, I am a sweet spoken person or an aggressive person, or I am a weak hearted insecure person, or I am a person with sense of worth. So in this way, to learn to look at oneself and know our scripts, we call it a script, we call it. Script or our conditionings. That is called a self-awareness. And that self-awareness is very helpful in order to introspect and reflect on one's tendencies, which may be good or bad, and then alter one's behavior in order to become a better individual, to develop our personality. That is called a self-awareness. Self-management, which we are talking now today, is another topic. How the management gurus use this word in the field of management is like this. They say that we often try to manage five things, isn't it? Man, machine, material, market and money. Correct? Five M's of management. So while trying to manage these five, a man becomes totally carried away by managing those things without worrying about managing oneself. In Srimad Bhagavatam, it is said that if a king finds that his subordinates are not respecting him, if his subordinates don't care for him, or his subordinates overthrow him, or ridicule him, then do you know what the king should do? The Bhagavatam says, you may probably think the king should cut off the head of somebody who does that. You may think so. That's not what Srimad Bhagavatam says. In Bhagavatam it is said the king should control his senses. Then his subordinates will surrender to him. It is said. So, that is the spirit of self-management also. Self-management talks about how if one learns to control one's mind, drug abuse, alcohol, pregnancy, suicide, rape, robbery, assault, burglary, all these things. This is even in 1980s, now we are in 2007 now. These problems have become even more. There is criminalism in the school. So this is the modern scenario. So Srila Prabhupada called the universities as centers of nescience. Why? Because modern education is producing not a generation of gentlemen, but a bunch of perverted intellectuals devoid of character. If you see average student coming out of the college in the modern times, he is not very well known for his character. Because the students often they don't respect their elders like parents or the grandparents or the teachers or the aged members, the senior citizens in the society. They don't have respect for them. And also the students are not taught how to practice celibacy and pure principles of living. How to keep distance from women. No, they are not trained. They live like dogs. And you also find the students have an understanding that everything must have come from a big bang and our ancestors must have been apes. So if your ancestors are apes, then they may even ask a question, why can't we behave like monkeys? After all, we have come from the branches. From the branches to the benches. Why can't we behave like monkeys? So, we find that in the modern times, people in the name of free culture, free thinking, free speech, free action, freedom, they have become more and more and more degraded. The culture has degraded to the gay culture in America, and it is coming to India also. And in this way, there is a very elaborate purport by Prabhupada in Ishopanishad about how the modern scenario of student education has become so bad. And students don't have any understanding of religion or God. Even those who wear t-shirts saying slogans like Nirvana or Yoga, Karma and all that, they don't know any true religion at all. Even those who go to yoga centers, they are mostly learning yogasanas to have more sense enjoyment, so that they can have a healthy body to enjoy more. Nobody knows about the soul, God, the purpose of life, nothing. And students are breaking all the regulative principles like smoking, drinking, illicit sex, meat eating, everything in schools. So Srila Prabhupada called the colleges as centers of nescience. Why? The purpose of education is to bring out the divine qualities in an individual. and make a person of character. That's the purpose of education. And when education does not serve that purpose, then it is nescience. You see, Srila Prabhupada says, a vulture may rise very high in the sky, 7 or 8 miles, and it is wonderful to see him fly in this way. He also has powerful eyes, for he can spot a carcass from a great distance. Yet what is the object of all these great qualifications? A dead body, a rotting carcass. His perfection is just to discover a dead piece of meat and eat it. That's all. Similarly, we may have a very high education, but what is the objective? Sense enjoyment. The enjoyment of this material body. We may rise very high with our spaceships, but what is the purpose? Sense gratification. That's all. This means that all the striving and all this high education are merely on the animal platform. Animals do eating, sleeping, mating and defending. Man, even after a lot of education, although he has gone sky high like an eagle, like an eagle is focusing on a dead carcass, modern man is also looking at only sense gratification. Indriya tarpan, sense gratification. He doesn't know any higher knowledge of what is the meaning of life, what is the goal of life, where am I going, what is God. So, education has not elevated him. That's Prabhupada's point. So, youth is a time for the mind, body and spirit to be nurtured and developed through discipline. Unfortunately, today's schools teach nothing of self-control. So, no courses are offered in ethics, philosophy or religion nowadays in the schools. In the name of secularism, modern students are brought out of the colleges, as Prabhupada calls it, as royal edition of animals, Prabhupada says, deluxe edition of animals. Because animals walk on 4 legs and human being walks on 2 legs. That's the only difference. So, they have no self-control. Now you talk about self-control, you will become unpopular in the college. You go and tell your friends that you should have regulation, you should have self-control, you should rise early in the morning, you should not break the regulative principles like meat eating, intoxication, illicit sex and all that. Nobody will want to talk to you. But we can show how vital is self-control for a youth. Here are some practical examples of self-control from our everyday life. For example, in your college mess, say they are serving gulab jamun, only one per head. After eating one, what do you feel like? You feel like having one more. Sometimes you shamelessly go to the kitchen and ask, can I have one more, please? And they deny you and they send you back. And all other friends may giggle, laugh at you. So, when we don't have control of the senses, we have to cut a sorry figure in front of others. Similarly, sometimes you meet an old school friend in your library, and then suddenly you jump up from your place and you start laughing loudly, talking to him, and then somebody shows you the board. Silence. Shh. Isn't it? So, in this way, sometimes we lose control of ourselves. Like imagine one of your professors announces, today's last period is free, but all of you can complete your homework and then go home. And then the teacher goes away. What do you think the students will do in the class? Do you think they'll very faithfully do the homework? And they'll be making rockets and throwing, isn't it? Giving out whistles and everything. See, you have packed your bag for a picnic during vacation with your intimate friends. And you come to know that your mother has a high fever and there is no one else at home to take care of her and you have to stay back. How do you take it? Sometimes you break down. Why can't I go? You feel that. Like here you see, you are sitting in the window seat of a train and a semi-clad young girl comes and sits next to you, talking and joking with her friends. Or conversely, if you are a girl, of course you don't have the problem. So what would be your response? How would you respond to that? Of course, undoubtedly you will be disturbed in the mind. So to learn restraint in all these situations is called self-control. So whatever examples I gave you now, is it not practical? You don't have to go to Bhagavad Gita for knowing these situations. Everyday life you face these situations. We do need self-control in our life. Otherwise even material life is difficult. To lead a normal life. Like here you see practical examples. Like singers, they avoid ice cream, cold drinks and hot chili items to have a high pitch while singing. Like a man with typhoid, he has to avoid oily items, isn't it? Otherwise his typhoid will increase. Like a pilot once, before driving a plane, he had drunk liquor. I think it was an Airbus. Some 1329 people died in a plane crash because the driver had taken liquor. You can imagine, thousands of lives were claimed because one man drank liquor. So they have to control these people. Without self-restraint, none of these can attain peace and happiness. So we have given three examples here. In the same way, all of you ask yourself, in your life also, there must have been times when you controlled your sleep, correct? Before the examinations. I'm very sure many of you must have burnt the midnight oil and studied for hours and hours. And certainly before an interview sometimes, we all struggle hard. We sometimes even forget to eat our lunch. So we all certainly control our mind and senses out of necessity in many situations, like the ones shown here. So there is self-control even in material life. Leave alone spiritualists. Even in material life there is self-control. And we can show it easily. And what is the advantage of self-control? Here is the advantage. The self-control gives a boost to your willpower. And if you have a great willpower, then you can very easily attain concentration and memory also. And what is that willpower? Here is the definition given. The power by virtue of which you can make your mind do what you wish to do. That is called willpower. What is willpower? You can make your mind do what you want the mind to do or what you wish to do. Generally what happens in our lives? We generally end up doing what the mind demands us to do. Correct? So instead of telling the mind, you do this for me, mind tells you, you do it for me. It's like that. You see, in order to understand it more easily, there is an example given that the mind is like a wife and you are like the husband. So the soul is like the husband and the mind is like the wife. Or the intelligence is like the husband, mind is like the wife. Now, of course, the husband is supposed to provide a house to the wife and give her sari, give her food, clothing, everything. But sometimes you find the wife controls the husband. You have seen that? Sometimes the wife has taken lead in a home and she demands husband so many things. She even sometimes taunts the husband also. Similarly, sometimes our mind takes over. And the mind makes demands. So those people who have a high willpower, they can make the mind do what they wish to do. For example, you are studying for your exam. You are opening and reading the book. Now it's a preparatory leave. And you have 25 days or 30 days time. And after reading 4 or 5 days, you feel a sort of saturation. Isn't it? You feel, oh, it's boring. Maybe I should go to a movie. Mind tells you, maybe I'll go to a movie. It'll be a good change so that I can study better tomorrow. And then today you go to a movie, tomorrow you read newspaper, day after you read a comic book. In this way, your PLs pass away very fastly. Sometimes the mind tricks you and you end up failing in all the papers. So sometimes you don't have the determination to tell your mind that I don't want to do this. You don't have the determination. That determination is what we are calling here as willpower. So it seems very easy to develop willpower, but it is not as easy as we think about it. See, William Penn, once he was giving advice to a drunkard. So William Penn asked the drunkard, what is the problem in giving up your drinking habit? It is as easy as opening your hand, he said. The drunkard asked, is it really so? If you can convince me of what you are saying, I will surely give up drinking, he said. And William Penn told him, as soon as you grasp a cup of wine, when you are taking it near your mouth, before it touches your lips, you open your hand. That's all. Then you will not drink it, he said. Isn't it? Something similar, Sharu Rangnekar is a very famous management consultant. He has given a very good suggestion for reducing weight. If any of you is too fat, here is a suggestion for weight loss program. You know what he says? You have to simply shake your head from left to right. He said, that's all. Of course, moving your head from left to right is very easy. But then he specified clearly when you should move your head from left to right, especially when you see ice creams, when you see pakoda, when you see paneer. So, of course, moving head is very easy, but you need the willpower to deny those items. Especially people who are extremely fat, they are the ones who are obsessed with eating habit. Like in America, there is a very, very fat woman whose fatness started increasing more and more. Now she never comes out of her house at all. Why? Because the door has become small for her to come out. So, we can see that the willpower is not very easy, although we know willpower is very valuable. Self-restraint develops willpower. Self-restraint is also self-control. How it is, we will see here. You see, human mind is like uncontrolled flood. See, when the flood is uncontrolled, like some years ago, we had a flood in Kandla. That flood was so powerful. It uproots the trees, it carries away the cattle, it destroys the houses, it kills human beings. So flood is never welcomeable. It's never wanted. But the same flood, if it is controlled by two banks on either side, similarly our mind, human mind, is also like a flood. It wants to go in all directions. When you are opening the book to study, you are thinking of a movie. When you go to the movie, you are worrying about the examination. Isn't it? It is said, think one thing at a time. It is said, if only you can think of only one thing at a time, you will become a superman. But our problem is, while we are playing table tennis, we are looking at the scoreboard. That's our problem. Like one great writer said, do not allow what you cannot do interfere with what you can do. What is the thing that you cannot do? The results. But we always worry about the results while studying for the exam. Like as soon as you open the GRE book, immediately America comes in your mind. Isn't it? You just cannot cram the words. That's our problem. So this is Bhagavad Gita philosophy where Lord Krishna says, do not worry about the result, just do your duty. So we can easily see that the mind always wanders here and there in different directions, like a flood. That is why it is devastating in our lives. But if you put two banks of the river, these two banks of the river is compared to your parents and teachers. They put two banks. Parents don't let you go in wrong direction and teachers also. Then the water gains a momentum and moves forward. And if you put a third barrier, then it becomes a dam, isn't it? The third barrier is God. So you have parents, you have teachers, and you have God in your life. Then the very same water assumes tremendous potential. Then it is stored energy, isn't it? You can use it for a hydroelectric power station. You can use it for irrigation purposes. So many valuable purposes. So it's no more destructive. So the mind is generally destructive because it takes you in all directions. But if you can control the mind, it can become productive. It becomes constructive. It is no more destructive. So for that you have to control the mind. That is very essential. Otherwise, mind can destroy us. You see, there are 10,000 random thoughts in a day that we think of, which means 7 thoughts per minute. Every minute we are thinking of 7 different things. Imagine, if there are 7 vectors in 7 different directions, then the point which is subjected to those vectors, 7 different directions, its movement will be based on those 7 vectors. Now you combine all those vectors together and then you apply one single vector in one direction. Imagine how powerful it will be. That is the power of a single thought, which we call a samadhi. You know what is samadhi? There are 8 stages in the Ashtanga Yoga. Yama, Niyama, Pranayama, Pratyahara. Yama, Niyama, Pranayama, Asana, Pratyahara, Dharana, Dhyana, and then Samadhi. So the last 3 stages, Dharana, Dhyana, and Samadhi, Dharana means to focus on one object for 12 seconds. And dhyana means to focus on object for 12 into 12, 144 seconds. And samadhi means 12 into 12 into 12. It comes to 25 minutes, 28 seconds to focus on one object, the Supreme Lord or the Super Soul, Paramatma in the heart. So yogi completely meditates for 25 minutes, 28 seconds, he has absolutely no distraction, which is called samadhi. So in chanting of Hare Krishna also, we do the same thing. What are we doing? You chant Hare Krishna and you hear that sound vibration. Again and again, your mind is hooked to hearing the holy name. Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Ram, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. So you are training the mind to focus on only hearing one thing at a time. Which means you are gradually becoming a superman by repeatedly hearing. To the degree you can hear the holy names attentively, as the years progress, your willpower also will develop in a very great way. You will see that. And that is the reason why when we begin chanting Hare Krishna, our mind is always distracted to different directions. You can see that. See, for example, if you learn to put restraints on your mind and learn to prevent it from wandering here and there and give your entire attention to whatever you are doing, say namely studying, for example, or doing a particular service, then you will be able to achieve like a superhuman being. You know, when Bhima, you all know the story of Bhima and Bakasura? You know, Bhima had carried a cartload full of food for this Bakasura, isn't it? And then when Bakasura came, Bhima had no plan to feed him food. Rather, he wanted to eat all of it himself. So you know what he did? He just sat in front of the cart and downloaded everything. And he started eating with his right hand. And the Bakasura became wild. He came running on Bhima. He was about to fall on Bhima and destroy him. And Bhima would, with his left hand, would, you know, just kick him. He would give him one kick and that fellow will fall away. Far away he would go and fall. Then by the time he gets up and comes back, Bhima would finish a little bit of food. And again that fellow will come. Again he'll give him a kick. And again he would be eating like that. So this is what Lord Krishna precisely teaches in Bhagavad Gita. Tani sarvani samyamya yukta asita matparaha. He says, you engage your mind in chanting my holy name. At the same time, any distractions come, you kick it away. That's what you have to do, both simultaneously. Not that, you know, you leave the food and you go to fight with him and he'll defeat you and he will eat all the food. Isn't it? So, Bhima had this 2-point program. So we also can do that. Whenever the mind wants to wander here and there, you don't let it go. Yato yato nishchalati manaschanchalam asthiram tatastato niyam yaitat atmani yeva vashamnaye. And then you chant the holy name. You know, Archimedes said a very interesting thing. He said, for example, say if you are weighing some 60 kg or 70 kg, you can only lift an object of 30-40 kgs maximum, not more than that. But Archimedes said, you can lift an object which is 1,000 kgs. Why only 1,000? Even 10,000 kgs. In fact, he said this famous slogan. He said, give me a long liver and a fulcrum. I can even lift the earth, he said. He said, give me a fulcrum and a liver that is long enough and a place for me to stand. I can even lift the earth, he said. You know this? Which means by using the principle of leverage, one can lift even heavy objects. And that lever is the willpower. The greater the willpower, the longer is the lever. So the more willpower you have, your power will be so much that you can do miraculous things which no one can do. Like Srila Prabhupada, for example, he had developed such absorption in chanting Hare Krishna that he could go to America and convert people who are so degraded. Americans who are into different type of culture altogether. So that type of willpower one can develop. You see, the mind is called as the taskmaster of the senses. The mind is called as a friend. When it is under the control of the intelligence. Because when it is under the control of intelligence, the mind is calm, clean, serene, grave, self-controlled, simple and pure. So our intelligence should be nourished by learning Bhagavad Gita. And with that intelligence, we have to subdue the mind. And tell the mind what is right to do and what is wrong and what should not be done. But when the mind is an enemy, what he does? It is controlled from within by desires and from without by sense objects. Inside, so we are all like a ant which is caught between two fires in a log of wood. Huh? Or like between devil and deep sea. Huh? On this side, inside the heart, there are a lot of bad desires. When you open the eyes, we are attracted to the sense objects in the world, so many things. So both ways, the mind causes trouble, the mind is an enemy. Then the mind is restless, frivolous and impure. For example, if somebody is driving your car, then you should have control over the driver, isn't it? Like you tell the driver, please take me to the temple. And the driver takes you to a liquor shop. What is the use of the driver? Sometimes our mind is like that. You want to tell the mind, no, I don't want this. The mind says, no, you have to have this. The mind forces you. So the yoga system is actually meant to control the mind in such a way that the mind will act as your friend, which means it will be subordinate to the intelligence. And that is possible by chanting. You see, this is from the Shikshashtakam. Nam namakari bahuda nija sarvashakti tatrarpita niyamita smaranena kalah etadrishi tava kripa bhagavan mamapi durdaivame drishamiha janinanuragah. My dear Lord, you are so kind that you are giving me your association in the form of your holy name. And this holy name can be chanted in any situation, any time, any place, anywhere, by anybody, without any qualification. There are no hard and fast rules for chanting Hare Krishna. So this is the beauty of the Hare Krishna Mahamantra. Anybody who sincerely takes it, takes to chanting of Hare Krishna, can very soon find that the mind becomes calm, cool, collected, and gradually one will be able to gain control over the mind, senses and one's life. So Srila Prabhupada says, no peace of mind without sense control. Somebody can read it loudly, please. Somebody, you give the mic.
Everyone in this material world is looking for
no peace of mind without
sense control.
Yeah, no peace of mind without sense control. Yeah, now you read.
Everyone in this material world is looking for peace, but they don't want to control the senses. For example, if you are diseased and the doctor says, take this medicine or follow this diet, but
you refuse.
You take whatever you want against the instruction of physician. So how could you be cured? Similarly, we want to be cured of chaotic condition of this material world. We want peace and prosperity, but we are not willing to control the senses.
Yeah, see, this is the problem. See, Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, you control the mind, control the senses, you will be happy, you will increase your willpower, you will become powerful. But we say, no, we don't want to control the senses. That's our problem. So we are not ready to accept the medicine, Prabhupada says. So this is the shloka I told you. Please all of you repeat. Tani sarvani samyamya yukta asita matparaha vashehi yasyendriyani tasya prajna pratishthita. One who restrains his senses, keeping them under full control and fixes his consciousness upon me, he is known to be a man of steady intelligence. See, Krishna is saying, those who can restrain their senses and keep them under their full control, on one hand, that means you have to, it's a two-component formula, you have to control your senses and mind on one hand, on the other hand, you have to fix your mind on chanting Hare Krishna. If you do that, then you are a man of steady intelligence, Krishna says. There are many benefits of self-control. One which we told earlier was developing willpower. And also, there are many other benefits given here. Compassion, knowledge, forgiveness, patience, non-violence, sincerity, mildness, modesty, determination, liberality, contentment, truthfulness, benevolence, and freedom from anger and envy. All these things come by controlling, by self-control. Self-control gives us the fortitude to withstand tribulation. That means even in difficult circumstances, you can, you know, control your mind. And mind becomes clear and discriminating. You can discriminate and know what is right, what is wrong. In short, self-control opens wide doors to material and spiritual peace and joy. So that is the beauty of self-control. Yeah. So, I was telling you before about this chanting of the holy name, by which we can gain easily self-control. The formula is like this. You chant Hare Krishna, by which you gain some willpower. And with that willpower, you can stop the mind from going in wrong directions. And the mind is the master and the senses are servants. For example, if you find your leg going to a wrong place, that is because the mind is telling the leg to go. Because mind is the master and all the five jnanendriyas and five karmendriyas are servants to the mind. So you have to catch the master only. Just like sometimes there are a lot of thieves, gangsters or thieves. You catch the leader of the thieves and then you can get all of them very easily. Isn't it? Because he knows all the secrets of each and every one of them. And he will get all of the people to you. But you have to catch the main person. Similarly, in our body, who is the main thief? Mind. Because the mind, just like this palm, mind is like this. Shrotram, Chakshu, Sparshanam, Rasanam, Granam. Evacha adishtaya manaschayam vishayanupasevate. It is said the five senses are grouped about the mind. Mind is the center. And they all are giving inputs to the mind only. Eyes are giving input to mind. Ears are giving. Nose is giving. All the senses are giving to mind. So he is the leader thief. And these are all, you know, small plunderers. So the main culprit is the mind. That is why even those who have begun chanting Hare Krishna, even they have some difficulty in concentrating. Because it's not very easy to focus and concentrate because mind, you know, in the beginning is very naughty, like a monkey, you know. He wonders why this fellow has started this chanting Hare Krishna now. He's going to control me. He doesn't want to let you control. He tries to always slip out and escape. But you have to force the mind. You know, Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati used to say, the morning you take a broomstick and beat your mind 100 times. You have to cleanse the mind. That beating is called as a chanting. So one should do that regularly. Only then the mind will gradually become purified. And what happens when you concentrate, you consider the sunlight which is diffused, you know. You keep a white paper on the top of your terrace, even on the hot sunny day, at noon, it will only become a little dull. But you take a magnifying glass and you collect all the diffused rays of the sun and you pass through the lens. And you focus it at the focal point. What happens? Fire. It can create a devastating fire. It can burn away the paper very easily. So that is the power of concentration. For concentration you need willpower. Only then you can concentrate. So these are all connected things. When you endeavor to chant Hare Krishna, you gain some willpower. And when you control your senses and say no to the wrong things, like no meat eating, no gambling, no intoxication, no illicit sex, when you say no to these things, then you gain some willpower. So by this willpower that you have gained now, you try to concentrate on hearing Hare Krishna. And then by that the concentration and memory, everything will improve. When that improves, you can burn it. You know Arjuna, how he concentrated on the eye of the wooden bird? You know, when he was hitting with his arrow? Because it was a complete concentration. When his guru Dronacharya asked him, what all do you see? Do you see the tree? He asked him. He said, I don't see the tree. Do you see me? No, I don't see you. Do you see the branches? He said, no, Guru, I'm not able to see the branch also. Then what else do you see? Do you see the bird? He said, no. Then what else do you see? He said, I only see the eye of the wooden bird, nothing else. He said, that was his concentration. You know, in those days, once when Greece, people of Greece did not have many powerful weapons, but suddenly they came to know when the Romans are coming in ships to attack them. So from a distance they saw the ships appearing and coming towards Greece. And all the Greeks started lamenting. They wanted to somehow save themselves. So they had a very famous scientist called Archimedes. So you know what Archimedes did? He arranged some concave mirrors near the shore. And using the sunlight he started focusing on the ships. And it was such a glaring light, it appeared like thousands of suns appearing together. and all the ships took overturn and left off. It is said due to the intense heat produced by the concave mirrors, some of the ships even caught fire, even in the middle of the ocean, it is said. So this is the power of concentration. So unless we concentrate our thoughts and we focus it on one activity, which I said to be samadhi, if you don't do that, our mind is always going to be having diffused vectors of varieties of thoughts. Like, you know, we all have difficulty to restrain the mind from wandering here and there. This is one of the biggest diseases of modern youth. They cannot sit calmly, like all of us sitting and hearing. For many people it's a great miracle to sit for a couple of hours and hear a lecture. For many people it's very difficult because the mind is very, very restless. So by controlling our mind and senses, we gain varieties of advantage. Now we are coming to the second part, where we are going to go to the self-management part more deeply. So when we talk of self-control, generally it means the external senses. For example, vachavegam, like we all have urge to speak to others. We cannot control our urge to speak. People want to always keep talking about cricket, and talking about movies, talking about parties, and talking about themselves, talking about others. Vachavegam. Manasavegam, urges of the mind. Krodhavegam, means people are unable to control their anger. Sometimes people become so angry, they even become physical in slapping and beating the other person. Vachavegam, manasavegam, krodhavegam, jihvavegam, urges of the tongue to eat some delicious preparations. Sometimes a student may travel some 20 kilometers to go and eat some particular delicacy in a hotel because of the long tongue. Isn't it? That is jihvavegam. Udaravegam. Udaravegam means the urges of the belly, stomach. Sometimes there is a competition between tongue and the stomach. You have experience of this? You know, sometimes the food is not very tasty. Still the stomach is too hungry. And the stomach keeps on eating. Give me more, give me more. And the tongue is saying, oh, food is so bad. It's not all tasty. But stomach says, whether you like it or not, you give me. Stomach is asking. Isn't it? But at other times, you find that you are eating a very tasty preparation. Like, you know, one student related his experience to me. He had come to a temple here. So he was eating khichdi and sweet rice. Not sweet rice. The sevai sweet. So when we were serving, he was eating khichdi. Khichdi was so attractive, you know. He wanted more and more, and the stomach was actually full. And it was going higher and higher. It appeared as if rice particle is going to come out of the nose. It was becoming so full, but he went on eating more and more along with the sevai also. And the belly started crying, hey, stop! Enough now, it's paining me. Our tongue said, no, it's very tasty, little more. Little more. So there's a competition between tongue and the belly also. So we find there is a lot of difficulty for us to say no to the stomach. But when you overeat, we have problem, isn't it? We suffer later. So, vachavegam, manasavegam, krodhavegam, jihvavegam, udaravegam, and then upasthavegam. Upasthavegam is the urges of the genitals. That is upasthavegam. Because the tongue, the belly and the genitals are in one line, one vertical line. When you don't control the tongue, when you overeat, then the tummy grows bigger and bigger. Become bigger. And when the tummy grows bigger and bigger, then your genitals become uncontrolled. Then genitals will clamor for sex life after that. So they all are connected, all three. So when we say self-control, generally controlling the six urges we call as self-control in general. But when we say self-management, we mean slightly different. We will see what. So here's the real story which happened in a famous company. We won't quote the name of the company. An angry CEO in a board meeting with four vice presidents and eight board members and 14 managers, they were all sitting, and suddenly he started bellowing criticism from the top of his lungs. And no one had a clue why this fellow is shouting like this. He was the CEO of the company. And all of them, they cringed to the seats and they were looking at each other in hindsights. And no one knew what to do. They all kept silent. And after some time, one by one, they all walked off. And the CEO shut down the company for a week, which led to several lakhs of rupees loss. Some 20, 30 lakh rupees loss. So, you can see, sometimes even a very learned and educated person loses temper. He's not able to restrain oneself. Sometimes we all have experience in our lives also, when you are angry at someone and you don't express it, then it turns into a pent-up feeling in your heart, which will explode in a ugly way at the wrong time, unexpected time. So, we are not certainly beyond these emotions. In our life we experience these things. You know, there is a story of Socrates, which is an opposite story. You know, Socrates and his friends always used to discuss philosophy. But his wife never liked this philosophy. She wanted Socrates to, you know, take some initiative, go out and do some responsible job and earn more money and expand her family facilities. But one day when Socrates was talking to his friends, his wife was yelling and shouting from the kitchen. And all the friends were getting disturbed. So Socrates told them, come, let's go to some park and discuss. You all seem to be very disturbed. And when they all got up and left the home, Socrates also came out. Suddenly the friends observed, from the top, there was a big bulk of water poured on Socrates. And Socrates' whole body became drenched with water. And the friends looked up, and sure enough, there was Socrates' wife standing in the top and pouring this water from a bucket. So Socrates did not shout or yell. What did he do? He just smiled. And he spoke philosophy to his friends. He told them, some time ago the clouds were rumbling and now they were pouring. So this was Socrates. So Socrates was not only humorous, this kind of maturity and this kind of stability of mind has come in Socrates' life by dint of his knowledge of the soul. Socrates clearly knew that he is different from the body. In his last years, when some people were trying to administer poison to him, he told them, you are trying to give me poison and kill me? You can't even see me. Yeah. What you are seeing is simply a dress. This body, what you are seeing is a dress. I am different from the body. Yeah? So that was Socrates actually. So he knew about the soul, knowledge of the soul. So just as we have the courage to direct others as to what they should be doing, why they should be doing, and how they should be doing, similarly, are we able to direct our sense organs with proper understanding of these aspects that we have to ask? This is called self-management. Which means, not only we manage the machine, the market, the money, the man, and all these things, 5 M's, but we have to be able to manage ourselves, which means managing our own anger. Because in the company, they found out there are 3 things very vital to every company: the customers visiting a company, and the employees of the company, and the financial power of the company. These 3 things are very vital in every company. So they found, the company people, the managers, top managers found that they are giving lot of importance to the customers visiting the company. You have seen how they treat the customers. You go to the front office of any hotel or MNC, you will always find there will be smiling, sweet smiling receptionists. There will be young girls smiling very nicely. The office will be very spick and span, very clean. And they will be received with great respect. They will be received with a juice or something. And they will be shaken hands. So as we call it, a plastic smile and a cardboard face, you know, people put up. You know, always you will see the front office is very attractive. Like we say, showcase, show office. So the customer is treated as good as God in many companies. They say, customer is our God. They put a slogan, you know. But they often, many companies fail in paying due attention to the internal customers. Who are the internal customers? The employees, yeah. They fail to pay attention. Because they often mishandle the employees, because of which the employees don't handle the customers effectively, due to which ultimately everything goes down. You understand? Just like, for example, you know the story of the farmer who had a hen which was laying golden eggs, isn't it? So the farmer thought that, you know, the golden eggs are so valuable and every day I have to wait to get one egg. Why not cut the hen into two and get all the millions of eggs at one stroke? He thought like that. So when he cut the hen into two, that was the end of the hen giving gold eggs. Similarly, sometimes the companies forget that the employees are also a very valuable asset to the company. And they have to be loved, cared, paid attention, and they have to be happy. If they are not happy, they are not going to work for the company successfully. They will not be loyal to the company. They will not be faithful to the company. And they may even start acting against the interests of the company. Today, 500 Fortune companies of America, the top companies, they have a great threat of preserving the loyalty of their employees towards the company. Especially preserving the secrets and intelligentsia of the company. The top Fortune 500 companies of America have this serious problem. Why? Because the employees are not showing loyalty. There is a reason for that. The companies are laying off people left and right at any time. Like one American company laid off 25,000 employees at one stroke. And they downsized the company. So when the employees know that I may be thrown out of my company any time, why do you think they are going to be loyal to the company? That's why there is body shopping. You know what is body shopping? Body shopping means, you know, like you are working for, say for example, you are working for Microsoft. And somebody gives you a call. How much are you getting? You are getting 8 lakh per annum. You come to Infosys, we will give you 9. Or you come to some other company. So, you will see that they call you from one company to another company. And they will pay you a little more. And they will ask you to bring all the secrets and talents what you learnt in the company. Which the company must have invested lakhs and crores of rupees. And they borrow it to another company. So, you can easily see that the reason is, if the employees are treated by the leaders very effectively, then the employees will not be able to leave that leader. That is why in our advertisement we had given this, management by hand, head and heart. What is the meaning of that? Behind the hand is the skill. Behind the head is the creativity. But behind the heart is the inspiration and enthusiasm. Out of the three, which is most important? Yeah? Heart is the most important. How to bring people's hearts to the company? That's the greatest challenge for all the modern day companies today. They found in America, in the early day research, they were giving only weightage and importance only to the hands. They said, train people in skills. If they have the skills, they will work hard for us. And then they were all learning skills. And then you go to the company and find out, no matter how much you schedule them, Gantt charts and all that you put up, you always find the workers are lazy. They don't do the work. You see, laziness is not a physical problem, it's a mental problem. For example, if I ask you how the car is running, you say the tires are running the car. It is foolishness. The tires are not running, the engine is running the car. When the engine is running the car, then the tires are moving also. Similarly, the laziness is not an external problem, it's an internal problem. It's a problem in the mind. So they have to have the sufficient enthu and inspiration to do the work for the company. So then they understood that, you know, we are not accepting any opinion or ideas from them. We are only, you know, taking only the physical help from them. Let us give them opportunity to open up and give their ideas, which was done by Japan, Kaizen system. So American approach is called as Taylorist approach. And Japanese approach is called as Kaizen approach. In Kaizen approach they say, why only come with hands? Come with your heads also. You bring your heads and we have our heads. Then we will put the heads together and we will come up with the idea. So behind the head is the creativity. But then later on they found even that is also not working. Because people's hearts are not there. Although they may sometimes give ideas, sometimes there is a quarrel. My opinion is better than yours and all that. But still people's hearts are not in the company. People's hearts are in home. Like in a weekend on a Friday, a man working for a software company is full of smiles because he is going to go weekend to home for a couple of days. And he is very happy about it. Do you think they are going to pay some extra salary for being at home? In fact, his wife and children will empty his pocket. Still he is smiling happily. No problem, you empty my pocket and still I am happy with you. So the company people wondered how this person is happy despite his pocket being looted in the weekend for going for outing. How he is able to give the heart to the family members. We want to bring the man's heart to the company. So this was the whole talk, you know, many management gurus were having. So they were trying to create a family culture in the company. Rather than give a appearance of a corporate culture, they wanted to give the appearance of a community. We will be seeing that how there is difference between corporation and community. So, if the leader in a company can be like a magnet, powerful magnet, then he can attract all the employees towards him. And many people work for company, not because of the company, but for the person whom they love there in the company. That's why, like for example, when I was working with Thermax, we had one Mr. Vishwanathan, who was our team leader, project leader. So we were about 10, 12 of us working in a team. So he would take meeting for us, and the meetings would be so interesting. He would make everyone feel respected, everyone feel valued, he will hear everyone's opinion. And at the end of the meeting, he would have given each of us our tasks to do. And he would make us feel that every one of us is indispensable for the team. And without us, he will not be able to achieve the ultimate success of the team. So that's the success of a team leader. A team leader is one who is able to bring about commitments and responsible behavior and self-motivation from each and every member of the team. That's a team leader, ideal team leader. But that's not an easy joke to be a team leader. You need a lot of qualities, some of which we'll be discussing here. So especially, you need the courage to direct yourself. I saw a very meaningful slogan in a college. It said, it requires courage to stand up and speak. And then it said, it also takes courage to sit down and hear. That also takes courage. Because listening is not an easy joke. One requires patience. See, that is why we have said management means manage the man within you before managing men. Which means we have to manage our own emotions. Like for example, if we don't know how to manage our anger, for example, we would be a failure in our lives. People have lost their friendship because of not able to control their anger. As it is said, the spilt milk, the sped arrow, and the words that are released from the mouth cannot be taken back. You heard this proverb? The milk, the spilt milk, or the sped arrow from a bow, or the words spoken from the mouth, they all cannot be taken back. It's finished. So, we have to manage our tongue. You see, the tongue is one of the organs of the body which has no bones, but the tongue can say something by which somebody may break your bones. Isn't it? You can speak something to someone. Say one gali, you know, one bad word to someone. Immediately you will be beaten up for that. Just see. So we have to manage the man within us before we want to manage other men around us. Sometimes a person feels that, why no one is obeying me? I want to control them. He tries to control them, but he is unable to control. Why? Because he has not controlled his own mind and senses. That is why I told you that first Bhagavatam verse. In Srimad Bhagavatam it is said, if you want others to be subordinate to you, others to cooperate with you and obey you, first you should control your own mind and senses. It is said. And then gain age or maturity to know what, when and how to manage. For self-management, one of the first qualities you need is the power to listen. You need that patience to listen to others. You know, the soul technique which is mentioned here, that stands for S for sitting squarely, and O for open posture, L for leaning forward, and E for eye contact. So this is all taught in empathic listening. If you go for a course on communication, they will teach you these things. Empathic listening means listening with an attentive ear and open heart. You see, if you can listen to others, then they will be ready to hear you when you talk to them. That is why it is said, you should listen in a way that others can talk to you, and you should talk in a way that others can listen to you. It is said. Sometimes the teacher has the experience that when he or she starts speaking in the class, then all the children are making noise, boys are making noise. You have seen that? He's not able to control the class. So the reason is simple. She is not able to talk in a way that others will listen. Because she has not listened to the children first. If she listens to them in a way that they can speak up, then she can talk to them in a way they will listen also. For that you have to be a detached observer. What is the meaning of being a detached observer? As I told you before, you remember what I told you about self-observation or self-awareness. That means you know I am not the body, I am the soul. And surrounding the soul, I have a man, buddhi, ahankar, mind, intelligence, ego. Surrounding that is a gross body. I am different from the body and mind. I am a soul. So you are able to see your own emotions. You can study, now my mind is frustrated. Now my mind is happy. Now my mind is feeling anger. I think now my mind is disturbed about that particular person. If I go to him, I will blurt out. Better not speak anything now. So you are able to study your own emotions and you are able to be detached. For example, somebody comes and complains about someone. Say A comes and complains to you about B, and then A goes away, and then B is coming to you. And then as soon as B comes to you, what do you think B will try to do when he meets you? He will try to clarify his position to you. He will try to clarify that I did not do wrong, correct? But if you don't have that maturity, you are going to tell B, I know everything about you, what you have done. I have heard from A. Now I have malady, this is the action I am going to take on you, get out of here. So B feels thoroughly misunderstood. And B feels you are not given the opportunity to speak up. You are not ready to listen his opinion. So that is how B loses trust in you. And once he loses trust in you, he is not going to hear you also. Ever in future. So Vidura was a very detached observer. How he was observing Dhritarashtra's problems and honestly counseled him and guided him many times. So we need the power to withdraw. Generally what happens with us, we put labels on people. He is a bad person, he is a good person, based on the perceptions we have derived about them long ago. 5 years ago you saw someone having some problem. Now you see them again, oh, that person I know. I know what he is. Because you carry the same perceptions. You know the story of Naked Pencho? You know, there was a small village boy who never used to wear any dress in his body when he was a 2-year, 3-year-old boy. So his name was Pencho. So later on Pencho grew up. You know, he went to school, he left the village and went to town, went to city, he became a lawyer. And then the village people got the news that Pencho has now become a lawyer now. Many people didn't believe. They said, no, impossible. And later on, he became a high court magistrate. And then the news came, he became a high court magistrate. And the people said, really? How this Naked Pencho became high court magistrate? They were saying, maybe he is not taking any salary. He is doing free job. They were saying. Because they had the old perception. Similarly, we also may have the world perception of people and we may not be ready to listen to others. Yeah, immature leader will immediately react, judge, assume. So, leaders who have no power to listen, they simply want to be surrounded by yes men, they want to just keep giving orders, they cannot empathize or appreciate subordinates. And if anybody gives suggestion to them, they consider that as an insubordination. And that really happened. I can tell you a story, a real story, you know, in Honda company. You know, there was a young GET, graduate engineering trainee, who joined the company. Within a few months of working in the company, he went to his boss and told him, sir, what is this? We are using water-cooled engines. Why are we wasting so much money? See, I have come up with a new design of an air-cooled engine. So he submitted a file to his boss. And his boss considered that as a sign of insubordination. He threw him out. Immediately laid him off the job. He said, who are you? I have been in the job for 30 years and you are just coming in now. You are a kid and you are giving me suggestion. He threw him out. And after 6 months, Mr. Honda himself wanted to know why that intelligent boy was thrown out of the department. He called his boss and found out, and then later on through others he came to know. Then he got the file, he picked up the file, he gave it to R&D department. and they went through it. And within 2-3 months they found out, yes, indeed what the boy said was true. The air cooling engines would be not only saving weight, it can also save lot of cost of the machine. So Mr. Honda became very happy, and again they called for the boy to join the company. He came back and joined. And he was working for the company. Today, the very same boy, he has become CEO of Honda company. His name is Mr. Tadashi Kume. The very same fellow. Imagine, simply because of one boss who was restless, who did not understand the value of the new entrant, the company was about to lose a CEO, future CEO. You can imagine. So we need the power to listen. And this power to listen requires many qualities. Why people don't have patience to listen? Because they fail to consider the position of another person. They recognize only their own motivations. Many times people think they know everything. They are not in a learning mood. Any person who wants to grow in life should be in a learning mood, always. You can learn even from somebody who is lower than you. If he is more intelligent, you can always learn. And many times when people listen also, they say, okay, whatever you want to say, you say. Now you are done with it? Okay, now I will give you the idea, take it. That's what many people do. Or in other words, when you speak to them, they are preparing to speak in their mind. Like you are going on telling them something, and then they are saying, okay, and then they are planning in their mind what to speak. So that kind of people, they really don't have the necessary adhikar or the depth to hear people. We need maturity to be a detached observer. Some people lack compassion for others, so they don't have patience. People who view themselves as centers can never pay any heed to others. Because if you are a leader in a team where you consider yourself the controller of the team and everyone subordinate to you and you want to dominate them and exploit them and enjoy being their boss, then actually you are not a well-wisher. It is said that we should see ourselves as coordinators of a team, a servant of a team. So those who think I am God in the team, they will never have patience. And because of the highly mechanized impersonal structure of modern society, the behavior also becomes impersonal. You see, nowadays, if one circuit gets cut or something, immediately everything will be off. The computers will be off, the air conditioning system will be off, and the whole company comes to a halt if the power supply is cut. And the modern electronic gadgets are so delicate to use. Sometimes they are very costly on one hand, on the other hand, sometimes they can, if one thing goes wrong, the whole thing becomes a waste. So because of the modern day equipments, there is lot of frustration created in the mind. How many of you have experienced the frustration when you try to send a message through a mobile and it always keeps giving you message sending failed? Yeah, how many of you experienced this? You have tried this? You see? More than half of the students, isn't it? You feel very frustrated, especially when you want to send an urgent message. So modern equipments are like this. They make us impersonal also. Sometimes because of the machines, we hardly interact with people. Sometimes even in a home, people are sending SMS from the first floor to ground floor. Sometimes people are writing mail. Here a person is writing a mail to a friend in America, but he has no friend to meet his neighbor. You can see that. So it leads to impersonal behavior and insensitivity. You see, modern managers have realized these things. So they are creating a favorable debate culture. This is called as constructive discontent, they call it. Constructive discontent means they allow the subordinates to come forward and express their grievances and also express their ideas. It's not only grievance, even ideas. For example, the modern leaders of future, they extend respect and trust, they stay open, curious, empathetic, constantly learning in the face of resistance and criticism. The discontent becomes a hotbed for creative ideas. See, Motorola has debate culture. See, These two companies, you can see, Philips company, they have town meetings where the managers must stand before employees and answer the questions posed to them. They also paste blank papers throughout the office and factory for employee suggestions. So, they are trying to be open to the suggestions by the employees. See, the Honda has a special culture called as listen, ask and speak up culture. They have idea contests open to all employees. And they have young engineers for whom they give exceptional levels of responsibility. And they are encouraging them to question also. So, from the previous examples, what we learned was this one main aspect, that we need patience, we need tolerance, we need humility, all these qualities in order to be able to hear and listen to the subordinates. Now, why should we listen to subordinates? As I told you, I'll tell you a simple example. Three things I told you are necessary for a company, isn't it? The customers, then the employees, and the financial strength, isn't it? But when you are working with employees, there are a lot of problems. Because nowadays you have to produce the product in a very inexpensive way. In India, people are looking for cheap products. So when you go for cheap product, the quality also may go down. But the quality has to be very high, because people want cheap and best. So you have to produce high quality products, which are also very cheap. And then if you say, okay, let me research and find out whether I can make the price so cheap, and I'll come out with the result in 10 years, if you say, nobody is going to take from you. You have to keep delivery promise also. So these three parameters, keeping delivery promise, high quality, and inexpensive. To meet these three requirements, you need highly committed employees. People who can stay late hours in the evening, people who are high quality job doers, people who have a high spirit and attitude, at the same time who are also very quick, people who can take a heavy load of work and go on cheerfully without becoming broken down. You need such kind of people with attitude, very high attitude people you need for that. So for that the boss has to be very cooperative. But if the team leader, for example, if the subordinate commits a mistake and it amounts to a loss, then the boss may break down. Why the hell you did like this? If he says like that, then the relationship is broken immediately. Then tomorrow when the boss says, can you stay for a couple of hours more in the evening? Then subordinate will say, sorry sir, I have no time. I have to go back. Because people have emotions. And when the emotions are hurt, they will not cooperate. You can easily see that. That's why beyond IQ is the EQ, emotional quotient. Some companies found out that as you go higher in the company, see, you are joining as a graduate engineering trainee, then you become a senior design executive, then you become a M2 manager, you become M1 manager, then you become works manager, then you become shop superintendent. As you go higher and higher, then you become, you know, MD of a company, CEO of a company. To the degree you go higher and higher in a company, they say the talent that you need most is emotional quotient, not intelligence quotient. There are three classes of people, leader, manager and producer. Producer needs hand, skill, like lathe worker or a fitter, he's a producer. And manager needs brain, which means he needs the head and creativity in order to engage all the machines and engage all the men in the company very nicely. And a leader needs the heart. So this is the relationship, producer, manager and leader. They need the hand, head and the heart. You need the three. But if you become a team leader, then you are a leader. Then you need the heart. Which means you need to be able to have these qualities of patience and tolerance, even in the face of adversities. And even in the face of revolutionization of technology and rapid change of advancement of technology, even in that face of that, one has to have these qualities if you have to work in a team. And that is where this topic also comes, team spirit or cooperation. Now the modern management gurus are realizing a fact that it is almost impossible for a boy coming out of a college, even MBA college like IIM, for example. If you put him in a company as a team leader, he cannot function very successfully. Why? You will see this here. A leader can inspire team spirit only when he himself can cooperate well with others. That means he himself should be cooperative. If he is a non-cooperative man with his boss, then how he can demand cooperation from his people who are below him? Empowering employees and creating healthy teams is based on almost entirely on the people. They have to feel good about themselves, which means they need self-esteem. People should feel that I am involved in the job and I am valued. I am not neglected or I am not downplayed or I am not a useless part of the company. I am also valuable. That self-esteem is needed. Feeling good about others. They also should feel good about their colleagues who are working with them. They should feel good about the company for which they are working. Like sometimes you go to a company for an interview and then the people in the company tell you, hey, don't join this company. You ask them, why? It's a very bad company. Really? Then why are you working here? What can I do? First guy, you know. Somehow or other I joined here. But you don't come. I am your well-wisher, I am telling you. Because they don't feel good about their company. Feeling good about the mission and vision associated with both the leaders and the companies for which they are working. So this is also very important. They should feel good about the mission and vision of the company. Not that, you know, they are working in a company, they are criticizing their own company for which they are working. So when there are closer relationships, there is greater success. You know, the time management, for example, the first generation, there are four generations of time management. The first generation, you know what it says? You make the TDL. TDL means to-do list. Just make the to-do list. One, you know, write 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 items and then put it in front of you on the notice board. And then start doing. That is first generation time management. Second generation time management tells you that you not only put the items, you also make schedules and charts, like, you know, calendar and diaries you should have, where this I will do on this day, that I will do on that day. Fix it in calendars and diaries. Then you will be more effective. That is second generation. Third generation time management says that although you may want to do many things, you can't do everything. So you prioritize them. That is third generation. So write down everything. On one hand you put the priority, you know. This is one, this is two, this is three, this is four. You prioritize them according to what you value in life. And then once it is done, you put a tick mark, done. That is third generation. Fourth generation time management says that you will be able to save time by working smarter, not harder. You know how to work smarter, not harder? If you have to work smarter, for that, you know, whatever input you give, the output will be based on that. Isn't it? So, if you increase the input, then only you can increase the output. But for increasing the input, for example, nowadays people have a lot of money, people have resources, machines they have money also, they have market survey, they have everything. The only area in which you can work is conserving the energy by which you can increase the input. So how you can conserve the energy? For that you need these four things, PQ, EQ, IQ and SQ. When you work on physical quotient, emotional quotient and intelligence quotient and spiritual quotient, when you work on these four things, and if you bring people closer, like in a family atmosphere in your company, that means you are a team leader. The latest research in management field shows neither the American system nor the Japanese system will work. They say only the ancient system of the Indian Gurukula, only that will work, they say. What is Indian Gurukul? They say in Indian Gurukul, the Guru was so much loved by the Shishyas. They will even lay down their life for the sake of their Guru. You all know the story of Aruni? You know Aruni, who was lying in the field in order to block the water on a rainy day for the pleasure of his Guru. So the modern management gurus are now finding out how we can make our employees so committed to the company. Like that. If you want employees so committed, for that you need a leader like the Guru. Like the Indian gurus were there. And then they have come to the point of understanding that if the leader is a principle-centered leader, then his subordinates will love him. Until they love him, they are not going to give their lives. Because they found out of 10 parameters they gave to the employees, what the employees are looking for the most. The first thing the employees were looking for was recognition and appreciation of the good work done by them. That was the first one. Recognition and appreciation of the good work done. And second one they were looking for was involvement in the design of the things in the company, and not just you are told to do something. And thirdly, salary. They wanted increment in salary. That was only a third in the priority. For them, the first one was recognition and appreciation of their existence as human beings in the company. So, in order to bring about a family culture, it is not a joke. Not anybody can do, unless one is a very great spiritualist. Like I was telling you, my boss, Mr. Vishwanathan, under whom I was working, he was a very great spiritualist. He was reading Bhagavad Gita regularly, and he would quote also a lot of things from Bhagavad Gita. So you will always find people who have a firm faith in God. They are very honest. They are thoroughly honest. They speak from the heart. And they are also very detached in life. They are not greedy. They are not trying to exploit others for the sake of money. And they don't talk to others in a manipulative way in order to get things done from others. So this kind of transparency, honesty and clean heart is necessary if one wants to become a principle-centered leader. And only such a leader can actually command his people to lay down their lives for him. That's possible. That's why he says, close the relationship, greater success. You see, when someone assumes a new leadership role today, he or she has a 40% chance of demonstrating disappointing performance. You see, this is what I was telling you. Even after somebody comes from a very reputed MBA college, you make them as a manager in a company, leader in a company, they have 40% chance of failing. 82% of them fail to build a teamwork relationship. See, 82% of those people, they fail in team playing with subordinates and peers. You know the reason why? Because they have ego problem. It is said, melt the ego glacier, lest it would submerge Titanic. It is said. The ego is like a moving glacier in an ocean, and sometimes there are important projects like the Titanic. If you melt the glacier, then it will turn into water, then there is no problem. But if you don't melt that ego, it will become the cause of destruction of such a valuable Titanic. Similarly, in companies also, sometimes big projects come down to earth. They go down because of people having an ego problem. Ego is a big problem. Everywhere, as soon as two people come, there is ego. You've heard the story of the lover and the beloved who had ego. You know, the lover was telling, the beloved was asking, why you didn't come to meet me? The lover said, I came, but your door was closed. Then she said, okay, if door was closed, why didn't you batter the door? Why didn't you batter the door? He said, no, I didn't batter the door, but I walked. You must have heard the sound of my foot. And you must have opened the door. She said, how can I hear the sound of your foot if you are standing outside my door? He said, no. But before standing, I was walking. At that time, you must have heard my sound. So back and forth, their argument was going like this. Similarly, you will find also in a company, or in any situation, even with your friends, you will find, as soon as there is an argument between two people, it just keeps building up more and more. So 82% people fail because of inability to play team. 58% people are confused about what is expected of them. 52% lack the required skills and knowledge to be able to be successful. You see, 58% are confused about their duty, 58% lack required skills, but 82% fail because they cannot play in a team. So Stanford University in America, they were told to do a research about the American and Japanese industrial situation. So they found that the American companies, they were always talking in terms of capturing the market, defeating the enemies, and exploiting the people. Whereas the Japanese industries, they were based on integrity. And if you see the kind of central theme of the Japanese companies, you know the word judo, they call it. Judo also means loyalty. Another meaning of the word judo. So you'll find that the Japanese people, they are given training in their early age itself on qualities like loyalty, on simplicity, on transparency, integrity, and that kind of qualities, and which leads to a very plain heart, straightforwardness, because of which they feel more closer and closer to each other. That's a closer relationship, greater success. Lateral service means art of making good on somebody else's mistakes. That means if you find one of your colleagues doing mistake, you go and help him. That kind of culture, like helping a brother. In the Vedic times, the kings were saintly and had no concern beyond the welfare of citizens. So the kings had these four duties. Toshana means they will see to it that the citizens get sufficient food. And Prinama means they will distribute gifts and charity to the citizens to satisfy them. Upalalana means they will call for meetings and they will speak sweet, thoughtful words to satisfy the people. Appreciating the people for the good work they have done, that's Upalalana. Anushasana means giving instructions on how to become good citizens. So kings used to do these four things: Toshana, Prinama, Upalalana, Anushasana. But modern leaders, they are only making more and more money. They are not interested in, you know, satisfying the... Of course, some companies are trying their best to do, but without a spiritual base, any amount of this help will not help. But the kings are all guided by the brahmanas, like Chanakya is guiding Chandragupta. Celebrating diversity and interdependence for team spirit. See, there are four cancers when we are working in a team. People criticizing one another, complaining about one another, comparison of one another, because of which they go to the zone of inferiority complex and the competitive mentality. So these things lead to your team going down, because the team has to work together for a common cause. The corporation elicits feelings of images of authority, bureaucracy, competition, power, rigid rules, machines and military chain of command. Community evokes feelings of volunteers helping others out. It's a voluntary job. Cooperation, town meetings, democracy, personal responsibility, commitment, teamwork, creative magic and fun. Community gives a richer, more involved sense of people opting to be part of the relationship to a large whole. But we can't create a community without a spiritual backing. It's not possible. That's what they are gradually realizing. Srila Prabhupada is saying below, the art of management means to draw out spontaneous loving spirit of sacrificing some energy for Krishna. All of us should become expert managers and preachers. This is Prabhupada's desire. Our students should be fit for teaching Krishna consciousness by their character, by their behavior, by their knowledge that is wanted. Since you are now a leader, therefore Krishna is forcing you to become very responsible and advanced devotee. This is Krishna's special favor upon you. So, now you must see that all boys and girls who come to the temple are given all facility to perfect their lives in Krishna consciousness. And you must give them good advice and instruction. You see, it's a very nice interview. Here there's a Tulasipaya Prabhu, temple president of Iris, ISKCON temple, Northern Ireland. He's asked the question, how do you see your role in INS Rath temple? Tulasi Priya Prabhu is saying, my focus is on spiritual aspect, on sadhana and encouraging devotees in Krishna consciousness. It is not the managerial role. It's more of a spiritual director than a manager. My role is to facilitate devotees so that they can find what they want to do for Krishna, that they can find a satisfying engagement and understand that this comes as a result of following spiritual principles. Will patience with individuals bring good long-term results? He's asking. Yes, patience brings long-term results because it takes time for devotees to develop in their Krishna consciousness. And devotees need to develop faith in the process of Krishna consciousness. One of the six items for progress in Krishna consciousness is patience. So if I am patient with devotees, then it gives them some space. It gives them the freedom and the time to develop in the Krishna consciousness. If one is impatient, then it becomes claustrophobic. Quite. So he is saying, I was telling you earlier also about the patience. So when you talk of self-management, self-management also means to control the mind essentially, but especially with respect to working in a situation where you manage the things, manage the people, manage money. In when you are put in such a situation, how you are able to restrain yourself from blowing out. That is what is self-management all about. Okay. See, ISKCON is a spiritual organization personally established by Srila Prabhupada. He must take care that he doesn't become material. Anything, husband-wife relationship, deity worship, or even prasadam can turn material by one's consciousness. In any society, there must be some organization and management. Otherwise, there will be chaos. Even in the spiritual world, Krishna's friends are subdivided and supervised. While Balram is the group leader for his covered boyfriends, Chandravali and Radharani head up left-wing and right-wing gopis, etc. ISKCON is no different. Which means, I was till now talking about karmi organizations. Now you can also take ISKCON as organization also. Like we have several voice centers in Pune and out of Pune. We have got overall coordinators. We have got project managers. We have got department heads. We have got front lines. We have got kitchen head, accountant, manager and all that. So you all are playing different roles. And I'm very sure you will have to handle people in your life. There may be some people under you. And when you are meeting them and handling them, you will face similar situations like what we discussed today. And we also need to be a self-manager. In order for people to interact in a harmonious fashion, dealings and activities must be regulated and orchestrated. How? The middle lecture, somebody can read it please, number one. The material nature?
The material nature is the world of the exploitation, but the spiritual nature is the world of the service. ISKCON is the spiritual organization regardless of the position, everywhere is the first and foremost,
a servant of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and Srila Prabhupada. No one should exploit his position for selfish interest. Which means, if we don't have a high degree of self-management, then we will tend to treat the subordinates just like machines or like factors in an equation. We may treat them. We may not be able to treat them as human beings properly. But we may forget them, forget the fact that they are Krishna's devotees.
Higher position means the greater service. Position means opportunity to purely represent the Srila Prabhupada. Hence, our management must be based on the humility and the tolerance.
Yeah. Somebody else can read? Next one.
Treat your subordinates and younger brothers. Leadership is based on spiritual qualification, not on anything material. A mature, dedicated teachers make the best leader.
Yeah, you see? Leadership is based on spiritual qualification, not on anything material. A mature, dedicated teacher makes the best leader. So, often we talk about management as a material talent. But here you can see, this is all from Prabhupada's letters. Prabhupada is saying that a mature, dedicated preacher, he can be the best leader, he says. So, sometimes people think this ability to manage is a material talent. But in the case of devotees, even if you have the material talent of managing, you can manage machines and karmi people outside because they are taking salary. But devotees are not taking any salary. They are doing a voluntary service. So, one has to have the spiritual maturity to be a manager. Yeah?
A leader's character must be spotless.
Yeah. Because if leader's character is not spotless, then others will not develop trust in him.
Leaders must feel of their followers, then the followers will naturally trust them.
Yeah.
It is important to lead with detachment and guide with a strong sense of duty.
Yeah. That means the leaders should also be detached from name, fame, position, honor, prestige, and they should be able to lead a simple life like a servant.
Krishna conscious management is autocratic and the democratic.
We have both. Like for example, there is one leader, but that although there is only one leader, he also takes the opinion of other devotees, everyone. That's why Prabhupada says it's democratic also.
Talk to devotees and to open with...
And be open to new ideas.
Don't hide anything from the Vaishnavas.
Then?
There should be more than one signer
for bank accounts, buying of properties, etc. So we follow it in all ISKCON temples. It is best if all incoming funds are declared before the deities, Srila Prabhupada and the Vaishnavas. All incoming funds should be deposited in the bank and then spent from the account. These are practical tips that Prabhupada gave in order for temples to run very peacefully. So this is the last slide. To hear the unheard is a necessary discipline to be a good ruler. For only when a ruler has learned to listen closely to the people's hearts, hearing their feelings uncommunicated, pains unexpressed, and complaints not spoken of, can he hope to inspire confidence in his people, understand when something is wrong, and meet the true needs of his citizens. The demise of states comes when leaders listen only to the superficial words and not penetrate deeply into the souls of the people to hear their true opinions, feelings and desires. See, this is the, we can say, absolute definition of self-management, which is given in this last slide. You know, this was spoken by one Chinese, great guru of Chinese. So once a boy came to study under him. So the Chinese guru, he told him, you go to the forest and perform some penance and come, then only I'll accept you as a student. So the student went, and then several days, several months he was there, then he came back. The teacher asked, in the early morning, what sounds did you hear? So the boy said, I heard the sound of cuckoos, I heard the sound of the bumblebees, sound of the bumblebees. I heard the sound of the parrots, he said. And the teacher said, that's not enough, go back. Again he went back into the forest and several months he performed meditation. And then he came back. Then the teacher asked him second time after many months of his meditation, now what sounds did you hear? He said, I heard the sound of the flowers drinking the dewdrops. Have you ever heard the sound? Flower drinking the dewdrops. He said, I heard the sound of the earth in the morning when the sun was touching, sun rays were touching the earth. The earth produces a smell in the morning. I could smell that, he said. So, in this way, he said some of the subtlest sounds which no one can even dream of. He heard, he said. Then at that time, the teacher told him this statement, what you are reading here. He told him, to hear the unheard is the necessary discipline to be a good ruler. What is that hearing the unheard? For only when a ruler has learned to listen closely to people's hearts. That means the ideal leader is one who can hear the people's hearts without them speaking it out of their mouth. He should be able to hear their feelings uncommunicated, pains unexpressed and complaints not spoken of. Sometimes leaders, even after people complain loudly, I am having a problem. Can somebody help me? And leader has no time. Leader has no concern. In many places, generally, people just ignore. What to speak of, even before people loudly make a complaint, to go close to them and hear their hearts and know. This is, we can say, the ideal. Like Lord Ramachandra, we can say. Lord Rama was such a leader that he himself would go like a spy, out in the society to see. So once when he heard a dhobi, criticizing his wife Sita, correct? You all know that? So because of which he banished Mother Sita in the forest. That is why Ramaraja is so much appreciated, Lord Rama's kingdom, the way he ruled. So self-manager is one who has controlled his mind and senses in a way by which he is able to act perfectly in all situations, in all complex situations, even in the time of trials and tribulations. In 2.14 and 15, Lord Krishna says, such a person, he will attain the Amritatva, or the immortality. Because he tolerates the summer and winter, cold and heat, honor and dishonor. And also in the 6th chapter, 8th, 9th verses, Krishna says, Suhran mitra aryudasi namadhyastha dvesha bandushu sadhushva pichapapeshu samabuddhir vishishyate. He says he sees all of them equally, whether one is a sadhu, one is a thief, one is a rogue, one is brother, relative, friend. So, in Bhagavad Gita there are many, many verses which are giving us information about the self-management. The second chapter also. So I just prepared the material. We are very soon planning to come up with a pocket book on self-management. So many of you might not have got opportunity to note down the things today. But once the pocket book comes, you can read more. And this is a very convincing subject which connects the modern day management to Bhagavad Gita principles. You will see that there is a close connection. The greater you go in the company, higher and higher. Like just a couple of days ago, I met Mr. Arun Nayyar, who is the CEO of the Hotel Pride. So I was sitting with him, he was talking to me, he was telling the same thing. He said, I am realizing how spirituality is so important. Without spiritually advanced, one will never be able to manage a large number of people with different chemistries, different natures, different desires, different wants and everything. So, as you go, all of you are now young students, you'll be passing out, you'll be joining companies, you'll be taking up more and more leadership positions in company. And now you're very fortunate to learn these things at a very early age. See, the beauty of spiritual life is, you know, you learn the wisdom of a 90-year-old man when you are just 19. That is the beauty of our Krishna consciousness movement. So you have the old man's wisdom in a young boy's body. So even when you are young, spiritual life is always like that. Like we went to Mayapur Gurukul. Small children, they are 9 or 10 year old, but they have the wisdom of a 30-year-old man. They know so much, they know. So most important part of this is the application part of this knowledge. You have to know these things. How many of you feel the subject matter was understandable to you today? Almost totally. Almost everyone. Thank you very much. I was a little afraid that the second part of it may be going over the head of some people. Because unless you take leadership, unless you struggle to manage people under you, you really can't relish this subject. So it seems that many of you are able to appreciate it. And that is also an indication that many of you are going to become powerful leaders in future. Thank you very much. Hare Krishna. Srila Prabhupada ki. You know, you are mind control, sense control. You know, there are some problems which are caused due to your personality. Your personality means sometimes you lose your temper, sometimes you are boasting about yourself, sometimes your way of dealings is not proper. Then those problems you have to change by self-change, we call it. But sometimes you are proper, you don't have any problem, but your neighbor is giving you a problem. And he is unreasonable in his demands. So the solution to this is that you try to change your behavior in such a way that the other person will also be pleased to change himself. That means by your change in behavior, you have to influence him to change, which is a very difficult thing. It is not very easy to do. Sometimes it happens. When you behave accordingly, then the person changes also. So in case people don't change, we also have to know the law of karma. Like for example, whatever sufferings we get in our lives, which are given by others to us, it is simply like a postman delivering some bill to you, coming and delivering to you. So the person who is causing you the trouble, he is simply an instrument in God's hands. He is just giving you the trouble. Like a postman one day comes and gives you 10,000 rupees check somebody has sent you. You are happy. Another day he comes and gives you a big electric bill of, you know, 5,000 rupees. So you have to accept both because both are coming from somebody else. Similarly, God is ultimately using someone as an instrument to cause you suffering as a reaction of what you have done in the past only. So if you see like that, you will not be frustrated. That's the reality actually. Then you need tolerance and patience because, you know, you will always have unreasonable people living in the world. There was Yudhishthira Maharaj and Duryodhana. Duryodhana was very unreasonable. Yudhishthira tolerated a lot. You know that of course Pandavas were about to be burnt by Duryodhana in the house of Lakh. But Yudhishthira Maharaj had the intelligence to not get cheated. But at the same time, he was intelligent enough to safeguard himself. At the same time, he was trying to be as reasonable as possible. Ultimately, the war was inevitable, Kurukshetra war. In our dealings also, we can try to be as kind as possible. With unreasonable people, it is best to keep distance from them, according to the Shastra. People hop their jobs, hop and jump from one job to another job very often, especially in software companies. So how ethical it is to leave a company which has brought you up in the technological market? Actually, even the companies which bring you up to a certain level, 2 years or 3 years or 4 years, if you have given some commitment to them, then you have to keep up your commitment. I'll tell you, for example, in Pune, we have Arrowhead Consultants in Koth Road, you know. It is run by a devotee. So, devotee congregation member. So, that congregation member, he sometimes picks up our boys, if somebody has got 50% or 52% in their BE. Still, he picks them up and he gives them a course. The course is costing them something like 80,000 rupees or something. He gives them free course. And then he takes a promise from them verbally that you have to stay with me for 3 years after this course. So one of our boys joined, he had got 52% or something, and he joined the course free of cost. He attended the course. Then he got the job. So after working for 1.5-2 years, one day he came and told me that, Prabhuji, this company is making a lot of money through me. I know that when they send me on deputation to another place out of Pune, for that job they got 1 lakh rupees, out of which they gave me only 5,000 rupees or something, he was telling. Company is making more money through me. Then I told him, you are a fool. You don't realize that they are giving you this 1 lakh rupees to this company because you are connected to this company. That is why you are valuable. Just like a branch is connected to a tree, you know, it's valuable. If you cut off the branch, it has no value afterwards. Similarly, I told him, you have given 3 years bond, then you should not fail. You should work for them 3 years because you have given a word. He was saying, no, Broji, if I go out now, I can earn double the money what they are paying me. I said, yes, it is true. You can earn double the money, but you have given a word to them that you will stay with them for 3 years. Even if you didn't give a written bond, you know, if you have given a verbal bond, you have to keep it. But if you have not given any bond to a company while joining, leaving one company and joining another company is not at all unethical nowadays because you have to grow also. You work in a company for 1 or 2 years, then you switch out another company, you get 10, 15,000 more. They keep on jumping, and companies also don't mind. Nowadays they are project oriented. They get a project done from you and they send you out. They don't mind. But if you are given a promise, certainly we have to keep it. To how much extent we should control our mind? If we restrain too much our mind, it will make a hell out of it. Like too much water in the dam can collapse the dam. Also, similarly, too much gaudiness. I think too much goodness, I think, can break down you too, he's saying. See, Krishna consciousness does not teach suppression. It teaches sublimation. What is the difference between the two? Suppression means, for example, I tell you, come, I'll teach you how to control your senses. You know, like Vipassana meditation they have, you know, Vipassana. Morning you go 8 o'clock, morning 8 to night 8. 12 hours, you should not talk to anyone. Simply be silent. Tonight 8 o'clock, you'll be given a radish or a carrot or a beetroot. Yeah. How many of you can remain like that for 10 days without talking to anybody? So we don't tell you don't talk. We tell you talk only about Krishna. We don't tell you don't sing. We tell you we sing only Mahamantra. We don't tell you don't dance. You know, we may tell you that don't go to the college in the stage and go do break dance or discotheque dance. You know. Instead, you dance for the pleasure of Krishna. We don't say don't eat. Eat only Kandamool. No, we don't say that. You can eat very delicious foods, but you offer it to Krishna first and then you eat it. So Krishna consciousness is a very beautiful process because, you know, all the things you want to do in karmic life, you have availability here also. But it's all sanctified here. Even marriage is not prohibited. If one says, I want to marry, and then one can marry, and within married life, one can have sex and children. That's permitted, even in the Shastra. Everything is allowed, you can see. But if you want to break laws of God, that is not permitted here. That's the only thing not permitted. So, Krishna consciousness is not at all suppression. It actually elevates you very smoothly. It's like, you know, jnanis trying to become desireless is like creating a vacuum in a bulb, which is a very difficult thing. To remove the oxygen completely with no traces in a bulb is a very difficult job. Even if you do that, if somebody touches it, it will break with a big clang sound. But if you send argon, xenon, krypton, inert gas into the bulb, then that will replace the oxygen very easily. Similarly, Krishna consciousness does not tell you that you become desireless. We tell you that you replace the material desires with spiritual desires. That's the main difference. So one of our devotees in Bombay used to say, "Aapko kuch chhodna nahi hai, sab jodna hai Bhagwan se." Chhodna nahi. You don't have to fear that you have to give up everything. You have to connect everything to God. So your mind will not make a hell out of the situation if you always practice different aspects of Krishna consciousness. There is so much fun also in Krishna consciousness. How spirituality should be practiced in corporate day-to-day work? Yeah. In day-to-day work, what you should do? You should rise early in the morning. You should chant Hare Krishna. Whatever number of rounds you can chant, read Bhagavad Gita, understand the philosophy. Whatever you eat, you cook the bhoga and offer to Krishna and eat only prasadam. Then you go to the company. Then you do your job. In your job also you can excel, isn't it? Like you can be punctual when you go to the company. And whatever job is given to you, you can do the job perfectly that is given to you. By your boss, you can be polite, you can be well behaved. By your good behavior, you can attract people to join our Hare Krishna classes. You can inspire them to become devotees by your gentlemanly behavior. And you can also practice self-management by which you learn to control your inner pushings, the vegas, by which people will be very touched. If somebody can control his senses, people are most touched by them. So, which means, you know, you are also considerate about others' needs, not only your own selfish needs. So, and in this way you can become a very wonderful karma yogi. Karma yogi means you do karma also and you do yoga also. And then gradually you will become a bhakti yogi. Bhakti yogi means you will become a proper devotee. What if in management we have to make a choice between material duties which might affect productivity and spiritual duties? We should never allow our material duties to affect our spiritual duty. Like somebody says, "I return from the company at 12 o'clock, Prabhuji, you know, and so morning I get up at 8 o'clock. You know, that is not permissible. You have to have a job where you can sleep latest by 10, 10:30, latest. Then morning you can rise by 4:35. You should rise early to bed, and early to rise makes you healthy, wealthy and wise, it is said. And you should chant, you should read. All these spiritual duties should never be thwarted by material duties. If it is happening to you, you should immediately approach a senior and take advice. "Prabhuji, please tell me how I should adjust my material life to suit my spiritual life." Don't try to adjust your spiritual life to suit your material life. You have to adjust your material life to suit your spiritual life. It's like saying, will you cut the chappal to suit your leg, or you will cut the leg to suit the chappal? Which will you do? Yeah? You have to cut the chappal, isn't it? So chappal is like material life. Leg is like spiritual life. Because inside the leg there is spirit, you know. Atma is there in this body. But chappal is dead matter, isn't it? So material life is like chappal. You have to adjust it to the spiritual life. And last question. Nowadays in some colleges, openly the students within class, or almost everyone, they write exams by copying. And also invigilators are also sometimes paid for allowing students to go on with their copying business. In today's competitive world, I am supposed to do what am I supposed to do if I want to live a character-based life? This is certainly a very relevant question of the times. Like recently one boy was asking us that, you know, he has to give an interview for IBM or some company. And they are having a telephonic interview. So this boy was telling that all the boys who give telephonic interview, they keep a senior with them, you know. A senior opens the book and shows, you have to tell the answer from here and all that. So what I should do? Similarly, another boy was telling me in one of the campus interviews in his college, you know, what the boys do, if there are 30 questions, I do 10 questions and you do 10 and he does 10. And then we all exchange the answers, you know. They were doing like that. So what I should do? So these are certainly very difficult questions. Because when corruption becomes the vogue, you know, or corruption becomes the normal practice, then everyone in the society is impelled. What I would do, I can tell you, honestly, like, you know, even in my days there was copying going on. Even when I was a school boy and I came to the college, boys used to bring chits. But in those days, the invigilators were extremely strict. If they would catch a boy who has brought a chit, they would debar him for 3 years minimum. He will be leaving the college and he would be crying, weeping and nothing doing. They would throw him out, write a letter and throw him out. They were very, very strict. So there was fear. But now, as he is rightly saying, it's likely now even the invigilators are given some bribe and the invigilators have to, all they have to do is close their eyes or turn to the side and the boys can copy. What I would say, you study very well, you do your best in the exam. Say, for example, if you are able to, you know, aim at a distinction and at least land in first class in your examination, it is not so badly affecting you in such a way that you have to fail and you will not get your degree. It is certainly not that bad. If you can get a first class and you can survive, then why should we copy? That would be my question. But if you find that that particular example I was giving you where everyone is copying and the teachers are telling the boys that you can exchange the answers. Because, you know, the campus interview, they are asking so many questions that you will never be able to complete it. The problem is of time. If there are 100 questions, you will be able to complete only 50. And the balance time, so the teachers, professors were themselves coming and encouraging. And there is no one else above the professors to supervise them at all. So there was a condition. So, in which case, I don't see anything wrong. Because the topmost person, even he himself is, you know, telling you that these questions can never be completed. You can do it. I'll tell you, for example, we were, in my first year of engineering, we had this smithy, you know, smithy. You have to heat the iron rod and you have to beat it. And you have to make a circular rod into a square, you know, cross section. So, I was very fond of this smithy and fitting, these two things. So when I went for the examination, so I was doing it and most of the boys, they had actually given it to one man, you know, one man who was a professor in that smithy department. And that person was putting it in the fire and doing. And myself and 2-3 of our friends, we were doing ourselves. So some of the other boys came and told me, hey, you can give it to that professor, he will do it for us. You know, he will do a very nice job. And you have to pay some 50 rupees to him, that's all, you know. So I said, why should I give? I can do a very good job, you know. So I was doing it myself, you know, and putting it and I was hitting it and making. Almost I had made a very perfect square cross section and I thought I'll get full marks for that, you know. I was thinking. So after all the people were done, myself and two of my friends, we were in one place. So that professor, so-called professor, he's not a professor, he's in that workshop in charge. He came to us and said, hey, aplo kya kar rahe, what are you doing here? Why you didn't give that to me? He asked. And we said, sir, we have completed the job, you know. And then he saw the things. No, it is not perfect, he said. And we were surprised. Why it is not perfect? You know, we can see with our eyes and he is also seeing and we saw. It was so perfectly done. So he again put it in the fire and he took it out and he hit it. Just tuck, tuck, two times he hit it and said, 50 rupees, love. So, of course, I was arguing with him, you know. Why should you take money? You know, you are a teacher. You are a workshop in charge, you know. Are you not getting your salary? So he was telling the college, they don't give us our full salary. We have to sign for, you know, 5,000 rupees, but in hand they give us only 2,000 rupees. So the balance money we take from the students. So then I took some sympathy and I gave him 50 rupees after that. So nowadays everywhere this kind of things are going on. What is dharma? What is adharma? It's a great challenge. But I can tell you honestly, we should try our best to be on the path of dharma. And we have to be very careful if you have to go off on the path of dharma. I'll tell you another example. One lady working in a bank, three other partners with her, they were into one particular loan giving, role. So different companies were coming for asking 20 lakh, 50 lakhs, 1 crore and different loans. So in one of the big loans that the company was giving, one company gave them 4 lakhs, you know, bribe. So those three people took one lakh and they gave her 1 lakh. And this Mataji was a devotee. So she didn't know whether to accept or not. She said, no, I won't accept, she said. They said, you have to accept. If you don't accept, we will transfer you to some other remote place. Some Patala Ganga somewhere. Far away place. Where there will be no school for your children, you know. There will be no marketplace and everything. They were frightening her. So she was wondering what to do. So next day she went. And they were afraid. Why? Because if she doesn't accept the money, she will open the truth. And it will go to the top people and a lot of problems will be created. And this, there is no record of all these things. So she accepted this 1 lakh and came to Krishna temple and put this 1 lakh in the hundi. She didn't take single penny from that. Because it is not a money rightly earned. Not by honorable means. Not that she took the money and say, what to do, you know, everyone is doing the same thing in the world, so I will also don't put in the pocket, you know, and enjoy it. No, that's not a money honorably earned. You should not enjoy that money. Similarly, this kind of copying and doing malpractices, it's certainly not a proper practice. I can show you people who are very righteous and who are flourishing in life also. Don't think that you will have to flourish by doing only the wrong things. Everyone is doing, what can I do? No. You can do the right thing, and there are many right people also flourishing, you can see that. And eventually, if all of you, like today such a big number of students are sitting here, if all of you become leaders in society, I am very sure you can turn the direction of the society to come to the right path. It's certainly possible. Prabhupada wanted leaders among students like all of you. So we should not allow the society to go down further. It's our duty, it's every one of our duty to uplift the society from degrading. For that we have to give them spiritual values. Without spiritual values, material values will not last long. From spiritual values, material values also will be followed. Srila Prabhupada ki.